The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
The following is a conversation between Becky Straw, co-founder and CEO of The Adventure Project, and Denver Frederick, host of The Business of Giving on AM 970 The Answer, WNYM, in New York City.
It is said that the best form of charity is to give someone a job. Unfortunately, it is more often said than actually executed. But a young organization that has brought those words to life is The Adventure Project, and it's a pleasure to have with us tonight their co-founder and CEO, Becky Straw. Good evening, Becky, and welcome to The Business of Giving.
Good evening. It's so awesome to be here.
Tell us what The Adventure Project does and the mission of the organization.
Absolutely. So we are a nonprofit organization, and we are adding venture capital to create jobs in developing countries. So what that means is that we're focused on helping giving people who live on less than $2 a day job training so that they can move themselves out of poverty. The key is that the job training is around helping the community. So that's everything from training people to be well mechanics or healthcare workers or helping farmers gain access to irrigation. It's what are those smart interventions that's going to lift that family out of poverty so that they can thrive.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. Well, you know, I believe you can learn a lot about an organization by understanding their founding story. So tell us yours, how you connected with your co-founder, Jody Landers, and how the Adventure Project came to be.
Yes. Well, I met my co-founder in an unconventional way. We met in the back of a truck in Liberia, and she is an incredible woman and mom, and she is actually a mom to six children, which is incredible in itself. And she had a great blog that she was running. And I think she was so popular because she's a great writer, but B, like, how many people have six kids and can make that all work? And she, you know, she was from a small town in Iowa, and her husband heard about these two twins in Sierra Leone that needed a family. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jody's the type of person who said, well, I already have four kids. Like, what's two more? Which, as a parent, who actually says that? But she did. And so, you know, with that, they decided that they wanted to be globally minded. And so she started raising money for an organization I used to be part of called Charity Water. Mm-hmm. And so I was a program director managing water projects there, and I met her in Liberia to show her all the good that came from her work. And during that time together, we became fast friends, but also connected over the shared belief that we're both not wealthy people, but we want to give well. And we want to know that the money we give is going to the right places and it's truly helping people. It's not about getting our name on a wall of a building. It's about just knowing that we empowered families to raise healthy children. So that's what started this adventure, so
this
to speak.
Adventure, yeah,
not
absolutely.
To be cliche.
You know, it's funny. I was at an event the other night with a guy who was one of 10 children, and he had six kids. And his father was giving him a hassle that he only had six kids, but he told his dad that six is the new 12.
The double inside, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, was there a decision as to whether you were going to become a nonprofit organization as opposed to a social enterprise?
Yes, we thought about it for a while, and I think for us, especially because we tend to talk a lot to moms and millennials and people who give, our average donation size is about $150. Mm-hmm. So having a tax benefit is helpful to those families. And so we felt being a nonprofit that actually focuses on job creation is kind of a cool, different approach. And we actually couldn't find many organizations that were targeting a movement of people to get involved and learn about these issues and know that their money is going to a good place. So we wanted to be the charity that does things differently.
Mm-hmm. And you're the charity that is looking to create jobs. Was there an aha moment for you where the centrality of a job to the well-being of an individual and their family really hit home?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I was working in the water space, so spending about a third of my time in sub-Saharan Africa and just traveling, finding different water partners, working with them, And, you know, there were several moments. I would say it got to the point where in every country I went to, there'd be one mom or dad that would come up to me and say, hey, thank you so much for this well, but, you know, I'm wondering if you're hiring. And that would be heartbreaking for me because at the time I was in my 20s. I was so young. Mm-hmm. And to see someone asking so earnestly about their need to take care of their family, or if I can get a job like this, then I can send my kids to school. And that really struck me. And then, you know, it was further enhanced when we started work. The first project we did was in Haiti.
Yeah.
And we were looking, it was right after the earthquake. So we were in one of the largest tent camps outside of Port-au-Prince, you know, and these three huge burly men came up to us. And we had heard rumors, you know, people are starting to get restless. People are getting really frustrated. It's been a year since the earthquake. And so these men approached us, and I was like, oh, shoot, you know, we didn't come with any – we're just assessing. We don't have any food. We weren't dropping off any supplies. And they were so sweet, and they looked at me and just said, ma'am, we're just wondering if you're hiring.
Wow.
And we really need a job. And, you know, for me, that was recognition that I was like, okay, we are about to launch something incredible because this is exactly what people want. And this is why organizations exist, is we need to be thinking about providing tools and services to people, giving them what they want, mm-hmm. not what we think they need.
Nothing like that moment of validation, is there?
No.
Well, the organization focuses on four big issues mm-hmm. that impact people living in poverty. They would be the environment, health, hunger, and water. That's a pretty broad canvas, having your foot in each one of those camps. Did you ever think of focusing on one or two of them, and why did you decide on all four?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think we did. We thought about, for example, we're in the fuel-efficient stove space, right? And that's a space that most people aren't aware of. You know, one of the largest killers of women and children is actually from breathing in toxic smoke while they prepare meals over open fires. So we thought, well, that's an area that doesn't have a lot of awareness. Maybe we can focus there. But when we took a step back, we realized there were so many issue areas that needed good jobs. And if you really want to help local communities thrive, how cool is it to provide, you know, water, healthcare, you know, access to farming and better food, and also, you know, fuel-efficient stoves.
Yeah,
and so taking a holistic approach in terms of providing things that are going to save children's lives, primarily children under 5 years old, and giving those interventions to communities would be really impactful. The second reason being, at the time, we didn't find a lot of incredible organizations that were implementing this approach in this way, where local organizations are creating jobs focused on sustainable impact. And so we felt that it was best to find the best of the best organizations. And that meant going outside just one focus area, but really broadening our approach.
Yeah, yeah. And in some ways, you're really only doing one thing, and that's jobs.
It's jobs.
That's the thread that really connects all these together. Well, let's take one of the areas in which you work, which is water.
Mm-hmm.
What is a big issue in the developing world around water, and what is the Adventure Project doing to address that issue?
Yes, I think incredible organizations like Charity Water, which mm-hmm. is the organization I used to be part of, which I was blessed to be part of, are really doing an incredible job raising awareness for the need for clean water and the problem surrounding so many people in, you know, over 600 million people that don't have access to clean water. I think what Americans or most people don't realize is that 36% of all wells in Africa are actually broken.
Yeah.
So what you have is you have incredible intentions going abroad to help people in need, but you don't have people thinking long term about the supply chain, the sustainability, having the right tools and spare parts to keep those wells working. And so that's where we felt that we could come in and provide value, is how could we be an organization providing the funding and support to build these businesses. So we have been supporting Water for People in Uganda that is providing a well mechanic training program where people are learning the skills and they get the tools and spare parts to be maintaining wells in their communities, which is going really well. And in fact, it's looking like the sub-county will be one of the first sub-counties in sub-Saharan Africa to give 100% of the population clean water.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, I sometimes wonder if it's worse never to have had clean water than to have had it and then have it taken away when the well goes down. That's got to be incredibly frustrating.
And that was my guilt, right? It's because I was going back and visiting communities after giving them clean water and seeing that there was many – the failure rate was pretty heartbreaking, right? And people – you see kids going back to the stream or the river and they're standing – you know, there's three wells that were built in their community and all are now dysfunctional, you know, or communities have tried to fix it on their own, you know, and that's really heartbreaking. So –
yeah. A real key to your business model that you were just sort of alluding to a moment ago does have to do with those local partners.
Mm-hmm.
And you're a pretty lean organization yourself. So how do you identify them and check them out and make sure that they're going to be the right partner for you?
Yeah. So I came from the program development space. So as I said, I spent a third of my time working in sub-Saharan Africa. So that was kind of my big focus area was we need to find incredible partners. And so we're very careful and, you know, we've only selected six organizations that fit our criteria so far. And so we vet every partner before we visit. I think that's a huge benefit. We go out and evaluate almost every year every partner just to make sure everyone's on track and that we really develop a strong relationship. And what we're looking for is very specific. You know, we're looking for organizations that provide a product market fit, meaning they're providing a service that community members are willing to pay for, which I think is very important. There's so many organizations that go out and pass out stuff and say, well, everybody wanted it because everyone took it.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they would have bought it.
I take
everything
on the street, too.
Yes, exactly.
Right, right. And so, also that can kill the businesses in the community when charities are doing that.
Absolutely. I mean, yeah, perfect stories in Haiti. We were helping start a fuel-efficient stove, clean cook stove enterprise, training, you know, mainly men were making them out of local materials. Women were selling them in Port-au-Prince. And then a large U.S. organization came in 2 years after the earthquake and passed out 10,000 free stoves that they imported from China or India.
Yeah, yeah.
And it decimated the
one
sales.
One business after another.
Decimated the sales for over 6 months for those women. And I think we often don't think about the consequences of our charitable giving. And we don't think holistically or bother to work with other organizations to assess the true needs of those communities and how can we be of most help.
Your organization is very focused on data. You love to see the needle move, albeit slowly. And you employ that data to inform your decision making. What data have you collected that you find to be really noteworthy?
Yeah, I think what the two things, the coolest things are – you know, we track every entrepreneur and we do a lot of assessment and we're deploying a mobile app so that people can collect the data on Android phones once they get to a Wi-Fi hotspot. The data's cached and once it gets to a hotspot, it gets sent to the back end, which is great. What we're finding is that once an entrepreneur is working, they're spending the money on two things, more food for their families, which is incredible, and then two, to send a kid to school for the first time. So we know that, you know, we've created 1,600 jobs, a little over that. And
what countries?
In Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Haiti, and India, and now Malawi. We just expanded. And we know that over 1,100 children have gone to school for the first time. And so that is not because we've provided any sort of scholarship or tuition. It's because those parents finally have enough money to be able to buy uniforms, buy the school fee, you know, afford the school fees and the materials. So that's what's really a measurement that we love tracking.
Yeah.
It's
sustainable.
It's sustainable.
Absolutely. That's right. You've done good work and absolutely they can take it from there. Who are some of your partners in this endeavor? And is there a particular demographic that really supports, you know, provides you with your general support?
Yeah. So as I said, like moms and millennials, people who give on average $150.
Yeah.
So primarily we're a movement and we're trying to show people that you don't have to give a lot of money to really transform someone's life. It's not about, you know, oh, I have to be rich or I have to be Jeff Bezos to be able to make an impact. It's like,
was only half as rich as he was.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I still love Jeff Bezos's money. But really trying to showcase that you can make an incredible difference in someone's life. And it's going to go to an incredible place that's going to transform that family, their children, their communities. And it doesn't have to be $1 million donation, right?
Yeah. And your corporate partners?
And so we have various corporate partners, everyone from the Mattel Foundation has given to, you know, women-founded jewelry companies, Catbird, which is an incredibly cool company that supports us. And what we love is actually foundations and corporations come to us with matching gift opportunities, which is actually really a great way to partner. One Day's Wages is an incredible foundation that's given to us the last 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from a $10,000 match to, you know, we've been doing $50,000 matches every year. By combining our resources, you know, we're able to raise $100,000, meaning that we're even more impactful than we would have been if we were working separately, right? So it's really a very smart and incredible way that we can leverage our strengths, where they're putting money up and then we're telling our community that they have a matching opportunity.
Being a slightly different kind of charity, do you ever find a challenge in trying to fit into some of these giving guidelines?
Oh, absolutely. That is our biggest challenge, is a lot of people are so rigid with their requirements that we're really an outlier. And so that yeah, it's definitely been a huge challenge. And, you know, we talk about scale and we've been working for 8 years and we've been getting by as a grassroots organization, slowly growing every year. And then, you know, a few months ago, we were blessed to receive $1 million gift from the Pineapple Fund, which came through Bitcoin donations. And so that was a catalytic gift to us that now is giving us the opportunity to grow and provide some capital.
That is fantastic. Well, yeah. Let's talk a little bit about scaling, because I think so many guests on this show have said that in this field, that is the hardest thing, is to take a great idea and to scale it for greater impact. Any lessons you've learned as your organization continues to grow and evolve?
Yeah, I think it is. It's really challenging, and we're in the thick of it now because, you know, we had this $1 million gift that came that was unexpected. And
well, how did you react to that, by the way? Do you remember how you reacted when you heard about that $1 million gift, which was unexpected?
Not only do I remember, my entire apartment my entire apartment building remembers how I reacted, you know, because I was 8 months pregnant at the time and not sleeping well. And
you didn't give birth that night, did you?
It came close. It was 3 weeks later. And, you know, we had heard about this donor giving away this money, and we had heard that they were going to reach out, and we waited and waited and we didn't hear back. We applied through the normal channels and we were like, oh man, a few months in, we were like, we didn't hear anything. And they're almost done giving out their funds to, you know, 10,000 organizations applied. They've already picked 40. What are we going to do? So we stopped all work and ended up building a microsite that said Dear Pineapple. And it was a whole site devoted to what we would do if they gave us $1 million and chose us as one of their partners.
Well, very creative.
And so then, thanks. So then, you know, I sent a subject line email that just said, we never heard from you, so we may do this, you know, and sent it to them and just said sincerely, like, we would be so honored if you would consider us. 24 hours later, I woke up at 3 in the morning. And the person wrote back and said, hey, Becky, sorry for the delay. I'd love to give you 1M. And then let me, you know, and I woke up. My husband thought I was in labor.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And then the next day we had a note under our door from somebody in the building saying that somebody had woken them up and could they please keep it down?
Who cares?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I'm sure there's a lot of kids who are going to be applying to college are probably going to keep that in mind when they haven't heard back from their school of choice.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about your corporate culture. You know, it is so important to the well-being and health of an organization. I don't think many people appreciate, though, how vital the early days and years are in establishing that culture. How do you think about that, Becky? And what are some of the things that you've done to create a great workplace culture at the Adventure Project?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think I've made a ton of mistakes, right? Because we're a startup and, like, you're bound to make mistakes. And especially I was at the early, I was a third employee at Charity Water. So that was a very quickly growing organization. And so I was able to learn a lot about building a great culture there. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, the key takeaways for me has been, like, since I've started my organization, I've had incredible life experiences and incredibly difficult experiences. You know, I lost my mom, but I met my husband, mm-hmm. and I got married, and I now have a 10-month-old. So I think it's just the experience of living life has really struck me in terms of how do you build a culture where you understand that people come to work every day, but they have a lot of other things going on in the world personally. Mm-hmm. And so how do you build a culture where you treat people like adults? How do you hire adults? Because you're not there to micromanage them. So I think one of the differences is we have a very flex work environment. Mm-hmm. My new chief development officer has 2 small kids, and I actually loved that because if you want to get something done, give it to somebody who's already busy because they tend to crank things out really quickly and effectively. And if you're treating people as adults and giving them the respect and freedom to get their jobs done, they're going to do it 100 times better than if you're micromanaging and checking in and clocking in and making sure that they're, you know, they're at their desks groveling away.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I think when you trust people, mm-hmm. and that becomes your default, assuming that they're going to do that job, they pay that trust back with a very nice dividend every mm-hmm. single time. And a lot of people don't think that way.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. I think another difference is, too, is that we, you know, really focus on outcomes and data. We love data, as I mm-hmm. said. And so one of our board members actually does this Run Like Clockwork business series, and she's an executive coach that has really helped us focus on, okay, we're tracking all of our time. We're seeing how our time is most effective, and then we're going to double down on that. So it's really, if I'm doing a task that isn't bringing in revenue or it isn't a good use of my time, then I need to outsource it, right? Or I need to either find an intern or we need to hire a consultant to get those low-level tasks off our plates so that we can focus on the bigger things.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of the bigger things, you've been in this field of international development for about a decade now at UNICEF, before Charity Water, mm-hmm. and now with TAP, as it's called, the mm-hmm. Adventure Project. What's your impression of it? What do you think the field is doing well, and where do you think it stands to improve?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think there's so many needs around the world. I think what is most hopeful and inspiring is that for the first time, less than 10% of the global population lives in extreme poverty.
Right.
Right. So we're doing something right, and people are moving out of poverty faster, which is incredible.
A lot of that is China, of course.
In India, yeah.
But it's
South Asia. It's
happening, yeah. And not many people realize that. They think it's getting worse. And
yeah.
It is the first time in human history that it's been in single digits.
Exactly. I would argue that that's because of enterprise, right? Mm-hmm. Because countries are able to develop, and because they're creating jobs, people are moving out of poverty. So that's why we're doubling down on sub-Saharan Africa, is because that's where most of the extreme poor are remaining and need the most funding mm-hmm. to grow. You know, in terms of criticism, I don't know if I'd call it that. I think what I really realized is that there were so many nonprofits that were spending so much time chasing the money, they weren't focused on evaluation. And the perfect example of that is wells, you know, are your wells still working? It's great that you've built 1 million of them. How many are still working?
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter how much money flows through it, you know, if they're not providing people
with clean water. There's no water flowing through if they're not working. That's
yeah.
right. You know,
yeah.
It's a little bit, I think, the way we think about infrastructure in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'd rather cut a ribbon and open a new building, but the subways yeah. haven't been, you know, maintained for a century.
Yep. Absolutely.
It's boring. Absolutely. You know, it's grunt work, and we just don't somehow gravitate to it.
Yeah. It's all the unsexy stuff
yeah.
that keeps
the plumbing.
Everything working, right?
Mm-hmm.
And keeps people to get into their jobs every day, right?
Yeah, Let me close with this, Becky. Much of your motivation and energy comes from the inspiring people that you've had the opportunity to meet and encounter through the Adventure Project. Share with us one of those stories, if you would.
Yeah, sure. I think you know, Grace is one that I always think about because I keep visiting her every time I'm in Uganda. But when I first met her, you know, she was recently widowed and she had 3 children. And so I asked she was very lucky in that Living Goods, an incredible healthcare organization, came into her community and was hiring to train women to become healthcare workers.
They're fantastic.
Fantastic. And so she was able to get hired, and it just started. And I asked, you know, her daughter, like, how do you feel now that your mom has to go to work every day? You know, what is it like for you? And she turned it around and said, like, well, now everybody calls my mom the kind one. And I said, like, well, what is it? The kind one? What does that mean? She's like, oh, she's just known as the kind one. And that's how she's referred in the community. And Grace, like, interjected and said, like, oh, well, it's because when I was, you know, first starting out a few weeks ago, a mom came to me crying that she her kids were her three kids were all sick, but she didn't have any money for medicine or anything. So Grace, you know, ran over with her the mom, saw that the kids all had a really bad case of malaria.
Mm-hmm.
And so what, you know, Grace said it was a really big turning point for her because she had just started and she was told, you can't give these drugs away. You need to sell them. That's how you're going to get commission from your sales. But what she said to the mom was like, okay, I'm going to loan you the money and I'm going to loan you these medicines and you can pay me back later. And so when the mom paid her back, she went through the whole village screaming, saying, you know, Grace is the kind one because she saved my children.
Oh, wow. That's a pretty good story to end on. I got to tell you, it really is.
Yeah.
Well, Becky Straw, the Chief Executive Officer of the Adventure Project, I want to thank you so much for being here this evening. Tell us about your website and how listeners can help support this work if they are so inclined.
Oh, I'd love that. It is called theadventureproject.org. And we would love support, whether you're joining our email list or if you really want to get involved, you can join our collective, which is a community of monthly donors who, you know, are committed to creating jobs and empowering other people. And actually, if you, you know, you join soon, we have a special group of donors who are going to donate $250 for every new sign up. So that's like a great way that you can help unlock more money for our organization and, you know, start your new year right with resolving to give back monthly.
You don't give them all their own website, though. No, I'm only kidding. Thanks, no. Becky. It was a real pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you so much, Denver. Appreciate it.
I'll be back with more of The Business of Giving right after this.
The Business of Giving can be heard every Sunday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. Eastern on AM 970 The Answer in New York and on iHeartRadio. You can follow us at Biz of Give on Twitter and at Facebook.com/Business of Giving.
3-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.